You're listening to the Orlando Sentinel's College Gridiron 365 podcast. Hosts Brant Parsons and Matt Mershell give their perspective on the hottest topics in college football. Now let's get on with the show.
And welcome to another edition of College Gridiron 365 podcast. I'm Brant Parsons in the Sentinel studio with Matt Mershell, as always. And I don't have the number in front of me. Week 11, I think, right?
Yes. Week 11, if you can believe that. This is actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think we're on like podcast number 45.
Something close to that.
Yes.
We're in the mid-40s for podcasts for this season. I can't believe.
44.
All right. And we have 45 coming up also.
Yes.
That's already in the can. It just needs to be published. I talked off the air before we started that this was comparable to last weekend. A big weekend, and then next weekend, not so much. A ton of top 25 matchups. But before we get to that, we didn't talk about the rankings last night because they come out late, and I have five kids that are not adjusting well to daylight savings or the removal of daylight saving, and everything goes to hell in my house at 7:30 with one or all five of my kids. So we haven't had a chance yet to dive into it. Nothing shocking, I don't think, in the rankings. The top four stayed the same. Oklahoma stayed on the outside. TCU moved into that in the hole behind Oklahoma on deck. Anything stand out from the rankings from you last night after they were announced?
You know, the only thing I would say is that, again, the committee showed that they still haven't been impressed with Wisconsin's strength of schedule. I mean, you know, undefeated Wisconsin team finds itself behind an undefeated Miami team. You know, again, and there's a lot of talk. I mean, I know Wisconsin plays Iowa this week. You know, and eventually, if they win the West, they're going to end up facing, you know, whoever the East champion is, whether that's Michigan State or Ohio State or whoever. I just don't know if that's enough. I don't know. It's a given that a 13-0 Wisconsin team gets into the playoff. I mean, because of what we're looking around with some of these other teams. Now, granted, some of this will clear up. Oklahoma, TCU play this weekend. That's going to probably move a spot out of there, one of those teams. Miami, but if Miami were to win this weekend and moves up and Notre Dame moves down, I mean, again, I'm not 100% sure right now because of the fact that the committee has kind of looked at this strength of schedule for the Badgers and put them where they're at. And I think other than that, I mean, you look at Washington, which was, we had talked about this, what, a month ago, that we thought Washington was dead, you know, when it came to getting a chance in the playoff. And there they are, you know, just inside the top 10. And they're going to have a chance if they can kind of win out and get the Pac-12 championship. They might find their way into the discussion if maybe something comes up with Wisconsin down the road if they suffer a loss. So to me, those are really the biggest shocks of anything that I saw this week.
And I think the thing that's going to hurt Wisconsin and Washington, we're finding, is probably they play in the most balanced conferences this year. You don't have great teams. You do have bad teams, but you have teams beating each other back and forth. And you have the Iowas beating the Ohio States and the Michigan States beating the Penn States and the Michigan States beating Michigan. And mm-hmm. And so in the Big Ten, you have all of these good teams. Some could have been great had, you know, they not lost these games. Loses some of the luster for Wisconsin if they advance to the Big Ten title game. They're going to play a team that's going to have some marks on them, and so maybe it's not as a marquee win. They're still going to have to beat an Ohio State, or they're going to have to beat a Michigan State. They're going to have to beat a good team, but maybe the number won't be high enough. Washington, same kind of thing in the Pac-12. Teams evened up, especially in the South, just beating up on each other. They may get a USC team there, may get an Arizona team. That's going to have some marks on it. So you lose like that ability to have that marquee conference win. When you look at the way the SEC is going, I don't know if you can pick a third best team in the SEC, maybe Auburn, but below Auburn, it's,
yeah,
there's not a lot in the SEC. And you're looking at Alabama and Georgia, both could go in that SEC title game undefeated. And whoever wins that game is going to have a marquee win and a huge win, but they haven't had the same. Even in years past, Alabama didn't have to worry about it, but the SEC East had Florida coming in who would have a loss, and the East would be beating each other. Georgia's just rolling through the East, and so you get a kind of a benefit in that sense, and I think that's something that Wisconsin and Washington may see go against them as this goes on. Miami, another team that's, if they win out, they get a chance to play Clemson, and that could be a marquee win, or Clemson beating Miami's a marquee win. And I just wonder if that will happen enough for Wisconsin and Washington.
Well, and I think the thing for Wisconsin is they've got to be undefeated. They've got to win the conference and be undefeated. Because if they suffer a loss, whether it's this weekend or whatever, I just don't think a one-loss Wisconsin team, even if they win the Big Ten, I don't know if that's enough to get them into the playoff, the top four spots. That's where the Pac-12 is in the situation. You know, Washington needs to win out. You know, I mean, they need to win out, and that includes possibly placing a USC in the conference championship. But if they don't, if they suffer a loss, and let's say USC were to be that loss in the conference championship, then you're going to have a two-loss team be a conference championship, and I don't think they're going to get in. So, I mean, that's what I mean about this season being kind of interesting, that you've got a lot of these Power 5 teams right now that are sitting around with one loss thinking, we don't have any room for any error. If we suffer another loss, we're done. We're not even going to be in this discussion. And you still have some teams right now who could have one loss. You know, Miami, for instance. Let's say Miami loses this weekend but then beats Clemson, you know, to win the ACC. I mean, that's, you know, that would be huge to see. I mean, so there's going to be some scenarios. I think this weekend will clear some things up a little bit. Obviously, we mentioned the Oklahoma TCU situation. But there's some other games here. Auburn plays Georgia. You know, that's an interesting matchup that if, you know, Georgia beats Auburn, that knocks Auburn kind of out of any sort of discussion there. You know, if Auburn were to upset Georgia, you know, what happens then, you know, in a sense of that's another SEC team that gets up into maybe the top four or five. So, again, there's a lot at stake right now. But nothing really outside of that, Brant. I think when you look at the rankings, it really caused me to have concern. I know UCF fans.
That was going to be the last thing I was going to bring up.
I know UCF fans are upset, and I get it. And
UCF,
I understand.
Just in case someone hasn't seen it, they're ranked number 12 in the coaches poll, number 14 in the AP poll, and number 18 in the college football rankings.
For the second week in a row. They didn't move up. And I get it. I understand. I'm a little perplexed why you didn't move up at least a spot or two based on some of the teams that lost. But, you know, talking to Kirby Hocutt, the selection committee chairman, he said, you know, listen, the strength of schedule isn't enough for UCF right now to put them up. And it didn't sound like they were going to be able to get up with, even if they beat UConn this weekend or Temple the weekend after that. And as we've talked about here in the office this morning, honestly, UCF, just win out your games. I mean, you're just going to have to win out. You accept the fact that you are probably, if you win out and you win the conference, you are going to go to the Peach Bowl. And that's basically what you have to accept. I think this idea on week two of that people are outraged that they're not somehow ranked in the top 10 or whatever, it doesn't matter. The Group of Five is always going to have their conference champion, is going to remain prime in this area. That's just the way the playoff is set up. So you can be angry, you can be outraged, you can go on social media and say, you know, the selection committee should be fired, and you go back to the BCS or whatever you want to do. At the end of the day, win your games, and you'll get in the spot you'll need to be. The Peach Bowl is a great bowl to be in. It's going to be a New Year's Six game, and it's really a huge payday for not only for the conference, for the school itself. So that's all you can hope for.
And on the UCF podcast that we did last week, you and I, when we sat in with Shannon Green, who's taking the UCF podcast back over now that she's here, but the three of us talked about it, and we both came from that vantage point. But Shannon's point was, for UCF, it matters some where they're ranked, because it helps with recruiting and that sort of thing. But I'm with you. If UCF finishes fifth in the rankings, if they finish 18th in the rankings, and they're the top Group of Five team, they're going to the Peach Bowl. And the money's coming in. You're going to play an Auburn. You're going to play a Georgia. You're going to play a big Power Five school that's had a great season. You're going to have a chance to really, you know, make a mark there. UCF, you're not going to be in the top four. Right or wrong, it's just not going to happen. And UCF can go undefeated and win the American. They don't have any marquee wins that are going to propel them, even if the sky falls above them and all these teams start losing all these games, they're not going to end up there. So don't stress on what number you are in the rankings. If UCF beats Connecticut, beats Temple, beats USF, and then goes and beats Memphis, whoever else is in that championship game, you're going to the Peach Bowl. Yeah. And that's all that matters. It doesn't matter what number you are in the rankings.
And I think there's some concern. People brought this up, you know, that how does UCF get ranked below, you know, undefeated Wisconsin's strength of schedule. And I did want to get into a Twitter war with people about this, but listen, Power Five outranks Power Six or whatever the group of five.
It just does.
It just does. I'm sorry. You can argue the point,
and I'll argue that with you that the group of five is put in a position where they can't win in this, and it's always going to happen that way. But that's the system, and it's not necessarily a knock at UCF.
But I'm going to say this: that's why the group of five worked out that deal when it came to the playoff, putting together the playoff, that they got their highest ranked champion to go to the New Year's Six game because they wanted to have some sort of guarantee. And this is a guarantee. And this isn't going to the Peach Bowl is nothing to be like, you know, to overlook, because that's a big game. It's a big payday. More than likely you're going to face a team like an Auburn if they're there, or like a, you know, it could be Clemson. It could be someone like that. So you're going to get your opportunity to play against the big boys, just like they did in the Fiesta Bowl years ago, back in 2013. So don't sweat it now. You can get angry. You can do whatever you want. You can be outraged. But at the end of the day, win your games, and you'll find your way in where you want to be. Now, you lose to USF or you lose to Memphis, then it doesn't matter at all.
And it doesn't matter where you're ranked, because you're not going. Matt, we talked about it. It's week 11, and some of these games we're going to talk about, I think almost, I'm going to call them Sweet 16 matchups, because there are at least three games I'm looking at here where the winner is still alive in the playoff and the loser's done.
Yep.
And so they move on to the quarterfinals, which will be the conference championship games where they got to win there to stay alive. And we're going to start, no particular order, except we'll start just in the home state. And number three, Notre Dame, visits number seven, Miami. There's no Catholics versus Convicts shirt, so there's not going to be a 34-30 part two. But a rivalry that was great in the late 80s and early 90s, that era, playing again and with high stakes involved in this one. And again, I talked about it being a Sweet 16. The winner of this one stays alive in the playoff race. The loser likely is out of it. I realize that there's probably still maybe a long road that Miami could curve around and get back in, but this is essentially both of these teams. Whoever wins this game stays alive. The loser stays out of it. Miami, we've talked about it. I've talked about it. They were lucky to win some games. Now I think they believe they're good, and maybe they are good. But I saw it against Virginia Tech. This was a team that I think did not have their identity, but they kept winning games that maybe they shouldn't have. You know, the win against Florida State, the miracle catch against Georgia Tech, the game against North Carolina, the worst team in the ACC where they struggled. They win those games. Virginia Tech comes in, and all of a sudden Miami, they believe that they're the top four team in the country, and they're playing like that. Now they get a chance to prove that against a Notre Dame team, which is still trying to prove that they belong where they are. And obviously the committee believes that they're good, and they have it at number three.
Yeah, and I think going back to a little bit what you just discussed, I think this game means more to Notre Dame than it does Miami, because I think if Notre Dame loses this game because they don't have a conference championship game, there's no shot at Notre Dame getting back into
with two losses.
With two losses, there's no shot. I think, as you mentioned, I think Miami loses this game. There is a possibility, you know, if they win the Coastal, they go on to win it, and they beat, let's say, a fourth or three Clemson in the ACC, you might be able to find a way to sneak in. So this means more to Notre Dame. I agree with you on the identity thing. I think the identity has been an important issue for Miami this year. I think they haven't been able to establish that. I think the thing that's helped them is their defense. This whole turnover chain. I mean, it's really kind of taken its life of its own, and it's become this big deal for them. They've forced, if you can believe this, 12 turnovers, 12 takeaways in the last three games. That's why they're winning games, because they're forcing those turnovers. That's going to be the reason why they beat Notre Dame, is because they're going to force turnovers. Notre Dame, you know, on the flip side of that, hasn't turned the ball over the last three games. I mean, they've been really good. This is something that Notre Dame teams under Brian Kelly have not done in the past, which is take care of the football. They've done a really good job of it. They've put together a really solid rushing attack. You look at what Josh Adams has done, the running back. You look at what Brandon Winbush has done, the quarterback for Notre Dame. They really control the football. They control the tempo. I'm not sure if Miami's defense has faced a rushing attack like this. I mean, Georgia Tech obviously would be the closest thing, but they're going to face some challenges. And Brandon Winbush can throw the football, too. That's the thing. He's got some receivers, too. So it's going to be a good game. It's on the road. And again, we talk about a Sweet 16 game. This is a game that's right there. This is a game that really could decide the make or break when it comes to the playoff.
And there could be a big crowd at Joe Robbie Stadium. I mean, it's old school.
Game day is going to be there. You know, you've got a lot of buzz on the Miami right now. They're very hot. It's really important for Mark Richt to not let his team get too caught up in what's going on and over kind of think it. You know, they need to continue to do what they're doing.
And before we move on to the next game, if anybody has followed our podcast or our videos, when Mark Richt was hired, it was a great hire, but you pointed out, and I want to give you credit for it, that the real steal was Manny Diaz, and he has proven to be a difference maker. And you just talk about that turnover chain and how many people are now
it's the most
duplicating
popular.
It and trying to replicate it. But he came up with that, and that's part of what he brings to the table. And that's why you said it, and I agreed with you, that was a hire that was going to resonate probably even more with this team than even Mark Richt was having him lead that defense.
Oh, and it's the most popular accessory in South Beach right now, isn't it? I mean, I mean, it's, you got, you know, every jeweler in town is creating a knockoff takeoff chain so they can listen. J Lo's wearing it around before the game against Virginia Tech, and you got, you know, so much buzz about it. Yeah, Manny Diaz has been the real reason. I mean, don't get me wrong, the offense has been solid because Mark Richt just took over the play calling and he's done a good job there, but this is a young offense. You know, I mean, Malik Rozier, again, is trying to get himself, is finally starting to get comfortable in that quarterback position. They lose Mark Walton. That was a big bro. Travis Homer's been a good addition. But again, that offense is young. The defense really has been the thing that stepped up and carried them, especially in those close games at the very end.
Yeah, they keep making the big play, and they're going to need to do that on Saturday night against Notre Dame. Another game Saturday night. We've talked about both the teams already on this podcast. Another Sweet 16 matchup. Oklahoma, TCU, though, again, TCU undefeated going into this game. You could see them losing this, still getting into the Big 12 title game, perhaps beating Oklahoma again, maybe not being completely out of it. But these are the two teams that are right on the outside of the top four, just waiting for one of those teams to lose. Winning this game, obviously, will set them right up into that spot. Oklahoma comes into this game with the best player in college football right now. I think Baker Mayfield, just the way he is running that offense, they are just so fine-tuned. And if they had half of a defense, we'd be talking about them being up there with the Alabamas and the Georgias, but they don't. So the key in this one is, can TCU take advantage of that Oklahoma defense that does seem to have some issues and some problems, because they're going to have to be able to score points to keep up with the Sooner offense?
Well, yeah, this is a classic number one offense in Oklahoma against the number one defense in TCU and the Big 12. Again, yeah, you talked about it. This is an interesting game because let's not forget the Big 12 has a championship game now, and you know, they're going to take the two top teams in this conference. Well, okay, this is the two top teams right now. So one of these teams that wins obviously could end up being in the Big 12 championship game. They both could. And how it goes, because this could be the early version of this. I think Baker Mayfield played himself back into the Heisman race. I think he's the favorite, to be honest with you. After last week, you know, he threw for over almost 600 yards, six total touchdowns. He's been outstanding. Their defense is abysmal. I mean, it's 87th ranked in the country. It was brought up several times during the teleconference with the selection committee last night. You know, how can this team be ranked where they are based on their defense? Do you look at the defense? Do you look at the stats? And, you know, Kirby Hocutt said, we look at the entire body of work. We look at everything, you know, from kicking to offense and defense. So there has been a concern with that. And this will be a game, I think, where TCU gets a real opportunity to kind of make a statement here, because if they can knock off Oklahoma, I think it's going to be tough for, you know, Oklahoma to get back in the mix, especially with the two losses.
And another game, not necessarily loser out, but a Sweet 16 match, that I'm going to call it, and that is the number one Georgia Bulldogs head off to the Plains to play number 10 Auburn. And I've been in some discussion with friends, and we're still trying to figure out if Georgia is the number one team, if Alabama's number one team, because to be fair, I don't know how tough their schedule has been, because it hasn't appeared to be that tough. We know who Auburn has faced. We know who they've lost to. They lost at Clemson in a low-scoring battle, and then they got shocked by LSU. But we've seen Auburn be able to beat all the other teams in the SEC West that they've played. This is, I think, the first real test since Georgia became real, because that game against Notre Dame, neither of those two teams had that kind of pressure on them. It was a big game, and obviously the first visit to South Bend and the pressures of that. But Georgia, we weren't expecting Georgia to do a whole lot. They weren't number one team. Now they're number one. They've got to defend that ranking, go on the road, play at a hostile environment in Auburn, and this is where we're going to see, is if not just if Georgia is worthy of that number one, But is the SEC worthy of two teams being even in consideration for the playoff, even after the SEC title game? This goes part of that way to show that Georgia is one of the top teams in the country.
Well, I was asked this morning, you know, on radio, why did Georgia get the top ranking with Alabama, you know, beating LSU last week? And I said, well, you look at who they played, and then you look at Notre Dame. That Notre Dame game now looms really large for Georgia because it was a, even though they, you know, it was a 1-point win, because Notre Dame is third ranked in these playoff rankings, that puts Georgia in that top, I think. This is an interesting game for me because Georgia comes in this game, they've wrapped up the SEC East, so they got that kind of goal met already. Now for Kirby Smart, it's a much bigger goal. It's trying to get your kids focused on the idea of don't get wrapped up in being number one, but also let's not slip up here, because if we lose this game, that one loss, you know, and then, you know, then it really makes things a lot tougher on us down the road. You know, even if we have to play Alabama, let's say, it's going to make things very tough. So how do you keep your team focused on that? How do you keep your players ready to go and sharp? How do you make sure you don't avoid that? Auburn's is an interesting team to me because this is a team right now that controls its own destiny. We talk about that phrase is used a lot, but they
do. With two losses, they control their own destiny.
They could beat Georgia, and then they could beat Alabama, and they could find themselves winning
and then beat Georgia again.
And then beat Georgia again, and they could find themselves in the playoffs. So if you're looking for a two-loss team to possibly find its way in the playoff at some point, it could be Auburn, depending on, you know, the situation here. And, you know, I think if you're Gus Malzahn, you know, the Auburn head coach, there's a lot of speculation, you know, if he gets blown out here and gets blown out against Alabama, you know, does he retain his job? They're obviously, Jay Jacobs announced he's stepping down as the athletic director of the program, of the school. You know, it's going to be interesting to see who comes in. Does he do enough? Does he have to keep this game close? Let's not forget, fans, that Auburn last year, I think Auburn fans don't forget this, but last year Auburn was number 8 in the playoff rankings, faced Georgia, an unranked Georgia team, and lost. They got upset, and that really ended their chance for a playoff run. So there's a little bit of that redemption storyline that's going to be thrown out here as well. So this is going to be a difficult game, but I like what Georgia's done. I know they haven't looked maybe as impressive as some people think they should, but they're doing what needs to be done to keep teams down. They get a win against Auburn. I think they lock themselves in that one spot again for another week.
And that freshman quarterback going up against that Auburn.
Jake Fromm, yes.
Yeah, going up against that Auburn defense. This will be his first real test, I think, against a speed and tenacity of a defense like Auburn. That'll be interesting to watch in that one. We keep talking about Alabama. We keep talking about them. I mean, they're kind of like the de facto playoff team, even though they're number 2. But they're going to be tested this week. They take on, they hit the road against number 16 Mississippi State, a team I don't think that should be ahead of UCF. But what do I know? But Alabama, they struggle against good quarterbacks in the past. This has been one of those games that maybe you'll see them struggle. The other thing with Alabama too is just injury bug has been really hitting them, especially on the defensive end. And you start wondering, you know, when does that magic run out? Because you look at all these teams and they always, something trips them up and teams lose games they shouldn't, and they get guys injured and they shouldn't. And Alabama just keeps winning these games. But now they're not as deep as they've been. They've filled NFL rosters for 2 years. They still have high quality, you know, 5-6-star guys at the starting position, but there's youth behind them. When these guys start getting hurt, does Alabama become vulnerable? We're going to see if that's the case when they hit the road and face the Cowbells and the Bulldogs in Mississippi State.
Yeah, I mean, think about this. You know, the injuries really hit them hard. You know, they found out they lost Sean Dean Hamilton this week. They lost Mac Wilson, you know, for 4 or 5 weeks because of a foot injury. They are thin as they've been at that linebacker position. They lost a couple guys after the Florida State game. Don't get me wrong, Nick Saban finds ways, you know, he's got 5-star guys, as you mentioned, who are on the bench that will step in and make plays. But that's going to be a concern, especially against a team like Mississippi State, where Nick Fitzgerald, you know, the talented dual threat quarterback, he's going to try to find ways to get into that secondary. He's going to try to find ways to take advantage of that weak spot in the middle. And it's going to be a test for this Alabama defense. This may be a bigger test than it was against LSU last week, because I think if Fitzgerald can kind of take advantage of that, we know that Alabama has a history of struggling against some of these kind of dual threat quarterbacks in the past. Last year they did contain Fitzgerald pretty well. He only had 15 yards rushing. But this is going to be a big test for them. They got to do it up front on the defensive line. They're going to have to contain him and avoid him getting outside the pocket and finding, you know, those kind of gaps where he can, you know, scramble for 10, 15, 12, you know, yards. They need to contain him. So to me, this is a bigger game almost in some regards than Georgia, you know, Auburn, because I think there's a legitimate opportunity for Mississippi State to make a push here.
Yeah, you talk about in baseball, you always talk about matchups, and in this one, the Alabama LSU game, I never thought LSU was going to win that game, even though LSU was on the rise up, because they just play perfectly into what Nick Saban's Alabama team likes to beat up on. This, you know, we say this now, and Alabama win this game by 40 points, but this Mississippi State team is the kind of team that has given Alabama fits in the past under Saban, because they have that talented quarterback. He's a lot better than he was last year when they played, and is who's able to attack them two ways, who's able to extend the defense deep. Then they come in this game with the injuries on the defensive end. If there is a game other than Auburn that Alabama is going to struggle this season in, it's going to be this one. And but then we say that, and they could go ahead and blow it out. But I'm going to be watching this especially early. And if Mississippi State can come out and get an early punch and maybe shock a little bit in Alabama, they can stick around this game, because then the place will also get louder and the cowbells will come out. But I think this, as you said, this one could be bigger than the Auburn Georgia game. This one could be very interesting if Mississippi State is able to take advantage of those. There's not many deficiencies on Alabama, but there are some that they can take advantage on that defense.
And it'll be interesting too, because, and again, this is all hypothetical, but let's say Mississippi State beats Alabama and they knock Alabama out of the top four. Alabama's got one loss, but let's say somehow Alabama manages, they still win the West and get into that game, and they beat Georgia. I mean, then,
well, they're in the playoff.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, again, you know, we're talking about these situations, but I mean, it's just, so yeah, you could stumble a little bit. To me, this is a key game. And you know who else is really going to be paying attention to this game? Florida fans, because they're looking across and saying, well, there's Dan Mullen. If Dan Mullen leads this team to beat Alabama, believe me, there'll be a lot more push for fans to think, well, maybe we should get Dan Mullen to be our head coach in the future.
A couple of other top 25 games, not Sweet 16 games per se, but that I want to touch upon. One of them, a team we talked about, number 8, Wisconsin. They get one of probably their first test of the season. Number 20, Iowa comes in, and Iowa's a different team away from Kinnick. They're tough to play at home. They had the perfect storm against Ohio State. Ohio State coming off that Penn State win, and they put the hammer down to the Buckeyes. Knocked Ohio State out of the playoffs for like the next three seasons. It was such a bad loss. But this is also an Iowa team that has struggled at times this year, but they're coming in on a high, and this will be Wisconsin's first chance, I think, to really kind of make that statement, because now people are watching Wisconsin. We've had 2 weeks of the rankings, people talking about Wisconsin not having a good win. Now they're going to get a ranked team to come in. People saw what Iowa did to Ohio State, so people believe that Iowa is now a worthy opponent. This will be a test for Wisconsin to say, hey, we are worthy of this ranking. We are worthy of being ranked higher. Let's take advantage of it, and let's do that. You know, let's go out and show that against Iowa, against Hawkeyes.
Yeah, or it could be Iowa thumps Wisconsin, and then everyone goes, "See, we told you that they weren't as good as they are."
I can't see Iowa thump. If this was down in the Hawkeye State, perhaps. But I mean, yeah, it could. Yes, I mean, Iowa could go up there. I mean, we've seen what Iowa can do.
We see what Iowa could do, and you know, I mean, I think Wisconsin's going to win this game. Obviously, if they win it, they need to look impressive doing it, because, as you mentioned before, the selection committee hasn't looked at their schedule very, you know, very well. Now they're going to get the opportunity here. Iowa's weird, and I think, as we mentioned, I mean, I think the Big Ten is definitely probably not that Jim Delaney's like rooting, you know, for anyone, but I'm sure there's a little bit of like, let's not see Iowa knock off Wisconsin, because
they're all just eating themselves.
Yes, because believe me, if that happens, then the Big Ten's done. I mean, I just don't see anyone jumping into that mix, you know, the way it is. Even if Ohio State looks good the next couple weeks or whatever, I mean, it's just I just don't see that happening. So, you know, but I think it's going to be a good game, and I think Wisconsin has proven obviously that they can play defense. You know, they've got Jonathan Taylor, their talented running back. They need to get him healthy 100%. When he's running the football well, Wisconsin wins games.
We a week ago, Ohio State came from 18 points down twice, win over Penn State. We were talking about JT Barrett for Heisman. We were questioning why they were at number 6 and what they would need to do to get into the playoff. And I'm not doing this segment this week because it doesn't stand out. But for 3 weeks, I picked three games for us to talk about and a ranked team that could be in trouble. And each week, one of those ranked teams lost. I know none of us expected what could have happened to Ohio State last week. And just an embarrassing loss to Iowa. JT Barrett, 4 interceptions. The defense gave up the most points they've given up since, I think, 1984 or 85 or something like that. Iowa, 55 points against Ohio State. Ohio State drops to number 13. All season long, we've been talking Ohio State, Penn State, maybe a little bit of Michigan early on, who's going to win the East. And here's this team dressed all in green that, with a win in the game on Saturday in Columbus, could be the team in the that wins the Big Ten East and shows up into the Big Ten Conference Championship game, and that's Michigan State. So here you have 12 versus 13, kicks off the football Saturday at noon. Do either of these teams, are they even thinking playoff at this point?
No.
No, this is all about winning that division and getting into the Big Ten title.
This is all about winning the division at this point. You know, I don't think any of those two teams were even in that thought process. Maybe, especially Michigan State wasn't in that thought process. Maybe they were in the thought process of being spoiler. You know, that's why they played Penn State. But you saw how well they played, and you saw how, you know, especially offensively, Michigan State, for instance, was able to take advantage of bad weather. You know, was able to do. They really kind of stopped Saquon Barkley, and they looked good doing it. Right now, You look at Ohio State right now, and there is a program that is in some serious questions. There's some serious question marks because, you know, Urban Meyer has a lot of talent. You know, obviously he's recruited well the last 3 or 4 years. You know, this was a team that I thought could easily contend for the national title. They had the returning talent. They were going to be there, and they've had two games where they've just looked like this was a totally different team, and they've looked out prepared, and some of that was JT Barrett, and some of that could be the offense, and some of that could be. So right now, if you're Urban Meyer, there's some serious question marks going off. You lose this weekend to Michigan State, then there'll be a lot of soul searching to figure out.
You're like talking Outback Bowl.
Yeah. So well, there's
you got from playoff to Outback to.
They could
or
be
worse.
Here. They could be in Orlando. They could be at
coming
the,
here is a good. That's a good thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But I'm just saying is that. But considering where they were supposed
right.
to be,
absolutely.
And we're not talking injuries. This isn't like you lost your starting quarterback and you're. This is just some fundamental mistakes. And I think that's something Urban will have to think about because it just goes to show you can recruit really well. But if things aren't working well when you fundamentally, then maybe that's something you have to look at and change. Now, they hired a new offensive coordinator, and they hired, you know, and Greg Schiano has been their defensive coordinator. Maybe do you make changes in the offseason? I don't know if that's the case. You know you lose JT Barrett, so you're going to have some young guys in there. But at some point, when do you decide we got to kind of think about the future and go from there?
And you can write off the loss to Oklahoma. It wasn't pretty, but you had a fired up Oklahoma team and the momentum and it rolled downhill. But to go against Iowa just after the big win against Penn State and just show up flat in all facets of the game, first play of the game, throw a pick six, go in the halftime tight and then just get blown away in the second half. I mean, I knew this game was over. I think the first play of the third quarter, a friend of mine that graduated from Iowa was like, wow, you guys are going to get a big win today. And, you know, you could just tell Iowa was excited for the game and Ohio State was ill-prepared. Ohio State, Michigan State, that's on Saturday at noon. Another noon game that stands out to me, Oklahoma State, Iowa State. Iowa State coming off a loss against West Virginia. Oklahoma State, the loss to Oklahoma. Iowa State's still in the top 25, still riding the wave of those wins that they have. And I said TCU was undefeated earlier, and I was wrong because they lost to Iowa State. But this is that second tier. But the winner of this game still can kind of hold out in that Big 12 race, maybe, and still kind of sneak in the back door into the Big 12 title game. So an interesting game on that standpoint between your third and fourth best teams in the Big 12.
Yeah. I think Iowa State is coming back to earth a little bit. You know, I mean, obviously they've played well defensively. You know, they did hold West Virginia pretty well in the second half. I mean, they're a good second half defensive team.
I mean, West Virginia jumped out and then held on. Iowa State played them well after that first quarter.
And I think Iowa State has a couple offensive issues still a little bit. They're maybe a couple playmakers away from being a good offense. But I think this was a good start, good season for them. And then you look at, like you said, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State comes off a really disappointing loss to Oklahoma. Mason Rudolph, even though they lost that game, threw for almost 500 yards, 5 touchdowns. He's a guy that still, you know, could be a factor in the Heisman race. I like what Oklahoma State's doing. I still think they feel like they're still legitimate shot. And this is, again, you talked about offense versus defense. I think that's what you're going to see this weekend.
And in the last game to talk about, game you're going to, you're hitting the road on Friday to head up to Atlanta because there's no place to stay in Clemson, South Carolina, and then heading over to Clemson for the game on Saturday. Florida State, a bruised, battered, beaten Florida State team with only 3 wins heads into Clemson. This is not the game that we thought it was going to be before the season. But as a Florida State team that can still be dangerous on defense, still has some weapons on offense, and a Clemson team that I think is still trying to round back into the form they showed earlier. A big win over NC State, but still showing some holes and some flaws and maybe some defensive lapses. But Clemson, now a team playing for their playoff life, I still think they are the best all-around team that I've seen in college football this year when they're playing as well as they can. I can't imagine there's an upset brewing here, but this will not be I can't imagine this being a blowout win for Clemson. They're going to have to work to get this win, but I think we're seeing the Clemson team trying to, like I said, form back into that the playing shape that they were in the beginning of the season, and now they're going to do that against their rival in the division, Florida State, who is coming in. They've added Louisiana Monroe to their schedule just to try and become bowl eligible to keep that streak going. This has not been a good year for Jimbo Fisher and his team. They've lost close games. The turnover margin is just embarrassing for them, and it's one of those things that Phil Steele will always pick out those. You know, he has his comeback teams. Florida State will be that comeback team because that's a number he looks at, a team that has an outrageous number of a turnover margin. So the Florida State team's maybe not as bad as the 3-5 record, but they're not a team that's on the same level at Clemson right now.
No, they're not. And I think they'll – I agree with you. I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I think this will be a closer game. I think, obviously, Florida State's playing for pride right now. And if you're Jimbo Fisher, and you know Jimbo will do this, he's probably using the motivation of, we can play spoiler. Let's go in there and knock them off. We ruin their chances at, you know, a possible playoff spot. You know, we make things a little more interesting. You know, you get that fourth win, and then, you know, maybe you can get, you know, a couple wins down the road. Louisiana Monroe, as you mentioned, and you can become bowl eligible. You lose this game, and let's say you do get blown out, then there's going to be a lot more question mark. Again, Jimbo's faced it week in and week out, but I think if you get embarrassed on that game against Clemson, I think there'll be a lot more people, you know, really clamoring for changes in that program. Not saying that's going to be Jimbo, but maybe on the coaching staff as well. But yeah, Florida State has not taken care of the football. Obviously, some of that's having an inexperienced freshman quarterback. Some of that's having a lot of injuries and guys in places they probably didn't want to be at. But not much has gone right for Florida State, and they need to kind of get some positivity moving forward.
And in Florida State after this, they have Delaware State. They have Florida, who looks like they've given up, and Louisiana Monroe. They can still salvage some of their season. They can still end up, even with a loss of Clemson, 6-6 and continuing that bowl streak, as we said. I think the thing that I'm watching for in Florida State, as I've been watching for in Florida, Florida seems to have quit. And I thought when Florida went to Missouri, I thought maybe they would have a revitalization under Randy Shannon. You would see guys, you know, playing up to the game, and they played worse than they had before and getting embarrassed by Missouri. You saw Florida State against Boston College, it seemed at times, where the kids were quitting, and just it seemed like they weren't fully into it. They were back invested into it last week against Syracuse, and it was a close game, but the players looked invested from the start of the game. They were excited at the end. It's amazing that so many people go crazy over beating Syracuse, but it was such a lift to finally get that home win. So that's what I'm watching for this Florida State team in this one. Come out and play hard, but then if the chips go down, do they continue to play hard, or do they just start throwing it in early?
Well, and I also, too, you've got a Florida Gators podcast. They could talk about this, I'm sure. But, you know, one of the things I thought about Florida's performance last week, unlike Florida State, was I felt like the play calling was atrocious. I felt like Randy Shannon and his coaching staff did not do his team any favors. You're not kicking field goals when you're down by 20-some points or whatever it was. You're not – and just saying afterwards, it's like, you know, we just wanted to get points to, like, you know, give our team, you know, like, we felt like we're in this game.
Florida Gators looking for moral victories at Missouri.
Yes, you know, so to me, that's not what Jimbo did. Jimbo has been able to get his team in there. They want to try to get touchdowns. They're going for them. They're, you know, I mean, the play calling has been better. I think that's helped. You know, so to me, that's a bigger deal. As much as the player is not quitting, is your coaches can't quit. Your coaches got to be calling games. Like, at some point, You're calling to win. You're not coaching to lose or not to lose. So to me, I think that's the difference that Florida State made last week, and you hope to see that again this weekend.
Well, have a safe trip to Clemson. Use the proper gas in the car, in the rental car, and be careful parking at the golf course. I'm trying to think what other issues that our past Florida State writer had visiting Clemson. But enjoy the trip, and it'll be, I know, a special occasion for you just to experience a football game. In Clemson. It's one of those places that I think as a football fan you need to go to. You get to go there to cover the game. And then after this is all said and done, we will come back to you and discuss what could be a crazy weekend in college football, or it could just have a lot of stay the same depending on who wins which game. But either way, it's going to make for a fun Saturday, and we will talk to you again after it right here at College Gridiron 365 Podcast.
The College Gridiron 365 podcast is produced by the Orlando Sentinel and hosted by Brant Parsons and Matt Mershell. Come back often and be sure to add the College Gridiron 365 podcast to your RSS and iTunes feeds. Follow everything college football at OrlandoSentinel.com.